Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a great show for you. We're going to talk a little about cover crops. If you've got any questions for us about this or anything else going on in your farm, just email us, radio@agphd.com. We are broadcasting today from the Morton studio. And, you know, Darren, when I start thinking about cover crops, everybody wants to talk about all these benefits to cover crops, and I'm totally on board. But I always want to look at, well, what are the ramifications of me putting these cover crops in? So I do get a little bit concerned, especially in dry areas of the country like where we farm. I want to make sure those cover crops are terminated in the fall, and in some cases early in the fall, so I maximize my moisture that I have in the spring. But that's my area. Other areas, they want to use more moisture. So it really all depends. And I guess that's some of the stuff we're going to talk through today is, where do these cover crops fit? Where do they not? What are the advantages? What are the disadvantages? What can you do on your farm to make your soil better through the use of cover crops? And where should you probably avoid cover crops?
You know, I think about the grass or broadleaf or combination of grass and broadleaf cover crops decision as being one of the most interesting ones, because let's just say that you had a soybean crop and you're going to come back in and you're just going to put cereal rye in there. Well, that can be good. You know, I think having a grass crop and then a broadleaf crop, I think that's a good thing. But let's say that you put cereal rye plus you put in a few broadleafs. Turnips, radishes, maybe soybeans, who knows what, in the cover crop. And you say, all right, well, here we go. I've got grass and broadleaves. Now what do you spray for weed control? There aren't very many products that you're going to be able to spray in that mix. So you've got to think about those kinds of things. And then let's say
here's the thing, Darren. Weeds can be a cover crop as well. Why is a weed not a cover crop? If it doesn't go
because
to seed.
Because it goes to seed.
Yeah, but how is it going to go to seed?
Are you kidding me? Right? Yeah. After harvest, how many weeds do you see in fields that go to seed that only get a few inches tall? Plenty of them. Because you think about it, their life cycle is to produce seed. Now, if you put in something like a winter wheat, for example, well, that's not going to put a head on because it's not planning on, I got to do it right now or I'm dead. If you put in something that's going to put on seed, that's going to be trouble. Now, soybeans, for example, say you had soybeans following a corn crop and you just threw them in for a cover. They aren't going to make seed. They just don't have enough time. So if you've got a crop that doesn't have
a lot of weeds,
time
it'd
to
be
make
the same.
It.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm with you. Yes, there are some weeds that could potentially go to seed. But you could mow them, you could till them, you could spray them.
Cover crop. That's not a good idea.
Well, a lot of people will talk about cover crops is, hey, they're able to choke out a lot of the weeds. So I don't really worry about it that much. I really don't but it just depends on your situation again. So like on our farm, if we're going to put a cover crop in after wheat, well, it's going to be the middle of July when we do that. Then, yes, I'm totally in agreement with you. We have lots of time before we get our freeze up in the fall. But some people will cut silage, and then they're going to try to throw a cover crop in September, and they only have a month and a half, or maybe a month, before freeze up comes. You know, is a weed really going to go to seed in there? Are you ever going to spray a herbicide in your cover crop area? We don't typically. So, yeah, it just depends. A lot of things to talk through today. All right, so I think before we get more into this cover crop thing, we need to get to the Ag PhD mailbag because we've been getting so many questions in. Got to get to a few of those today.
It's the mailbag.
All right, this one comes from Scott in Northwest Michigan. He said, I've been hearing a lot about winter feeding of hay spread out in pastures for livestock. The articles I've read and people I've talked to about the benefit of spreading manure, adding organic matter, and putting fertilizer back in the ground are big. My understanding of building organic matter, though, is it has to be in the ground if we want to build soil organic matter, and what's on top of the ground basically oxidizes. Very little of it gets into the ground unless it's worked in. First of all, is that true? Second of all, am I going to add anything in terms of benefit to my soil by putting hay out and spreading it across the field other than just spreading the manure a little more evenly from the cattle eating it or sheep eating it? And he said, I'm raising sheep in northwest lower Michigan, but our soil is basically sandy. So I'm really looking for a way to try and build that soil.
Okay, so here is the best way you build soil organic matter. You raise crops, and then you go no-till. By doing that, you will leave the roots below ground undisturbed, and that's really what forms most of the soil's organic matter. Residue that's going to be on top of the ground, to your point, that very little of that is going to end up forming organic matter. And you mentioned the tilling it in. That's absolutely not true. If you try to till it in, you're going to make things even worse, and you're going to deplete your soil's organic matter in many cases. Is it possible that a worm can come up on top of the ground, pull the residue down? It gets into the soil. It forms organic matter. Yes, it's absolutely possible, and that does happen in no-till some. It's a tiny, tiny percentage of your soil's organic matter, though. Again, most of your soil's organic matter is going to be that below-ground residue, which is roots. Leave those intact. They, over time, will end up forming organic matter. The benefit to having your hay or manure laid on the soil surface is more to protect that soil from erosion, wind or water erosion, but it is not about forming organic matter. I would also say, if you're going to lay organic matter on the, or organic material on the soil surface, that's one thing. But when you start talking about laying manure on the soil surface, now I got a lot of concerns, because manure is very nutrient rich. And it has a lot of phosphorus, which doesn't move very well in soil. Phosphorus is the number one water quality issue we have in North America today in fresh water. I'm not real big on leaving manure on top of the ground. I would highly encourage you either inject that or till it in so you get the nutrients down there. So anyway, yeah, lots to talk about there. We could do an entire show on that one question, I think, Darren.
Yeah, certainly has a lot to talk about on many of these topics that we'll get into, one of them being cover crops. We're going to discuss that on today's program and get back to some more questions that have come in for the Ag PhD mailbag too. Stay tuned.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation, and patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today. We're going to be talking about cover crops, and that's one of those areas of agriculture that we've had so many questions on over the last few years. There's been a lot of interest, a lot of people trying cover crops, but there are a lot of herbicide and management questions that also go along with this too. We got Nick Husteddy with us right now with FMC to try and address some of those. Nick, how are you doing today? Yep, there you go. Are you on now, Nick?
Yep, can you hear me?
Yes, I sure can. So we're talking cover crops today. I'm sure you get a lot of questions when it comes to, hey, I'm planting soybeans. Can I use certain pre-emerge herbicides? Is that going to impact my cover crop? Or I'm planting corn and my herbicide program is this. Will that impact my cover crop? How do you take those questions on?
Yeah, so a lot of that is going to depend upon what the year looks like. So, you know, a lot of these herbicides we're using have residual components, and so they can carry over into some of the cover crops that we might be planting sequentially. So we're paying attention to the year. If we have a lot of rainfall, often that's going to degrade the herbicide in the soil to where we have less risk to see an issue with a subsequent cover crop seeding. But, you know, we get years where it's drier, and, you know, that can cause more of an issue. This past fall, it's been plenty wet. I don't expect to see a tremendous amount of herbicide residue kind of carrying over. But as we get into those specific scenarios, often we'll guide them to do a bioassay. So just plant a small portion of the field and kind of see what happens in terms of emergence.
So this practice of cover crops is really growing, and I'm sure that impacts a lot of things. What are some of the questions that you get around cover crops and crop management?
Yeah, so when we talk about cover crops, you got to factor in the advantages and disadvantages, and you guys are well aware what cover crops can do for soil health and nutrient loss and weed suppression and things like that. But as we think about those disadvantages, you know, you could potentially see some difficulty in establishment depending upon where you're at in terms of geography. Could potentially see more soil-borne diseases as well as end tie-up in that decomposing residue. But there's ways to manage around all this. And so really what we're mostly focused on in terms of cover crops is how do we supplement our herbicide control tactics, because we want to form a more integrated approach and keep all these tools effective for a longer period of time. We know there's no silver bullets in the pipeline in terms of herbicides for the next probably 8 to 10 years. And so we really have to manage our current tools effectively.
Just had a question come in earlier this week from a grower who had a standing cover crop, and he was going to go in the spring and burn things down, and then he was going to use Authority MTZ for his pre-emerge product that he wanted to get out there for soybeans. How do you work with that with guys in no-till that are operating similar to this? Let's burn down that cover crop, and it's still big out in the field, and it's really helpful for stopping a lot of those winter annual weeds from coming. But now how do you get that pre-emerge herbicide to work? Do you have much issue with that?
So for the most part, we don't see an issue in terms of the herbicide crystallizing on that cover crop residue and then washing off with rainfall. But we always tell folks to apply the full labeled rate, and that's just good general practice in the resistance era that we're dealing with. And so also that's going to allow us a little bit of buffer if we do see some tie-up. But for the most part, you know, as we make those recommendations, we're going to have folks come out and you know, burn down with glyphosate and an auxin like 2,4-D or dicamba, and then typically come back at planting with paraquat, dermoxone type product in combination with our Authority or Anthem type brands.
The other thing that we've been getting questions, Nick, is around slugs and wireworms and some of the different bugs that can end up hanging out or really thriving in a system where you've got cover crops as part of the issue or as part of the program. What are some of the control methods that you'd use for dealing with different bugs or things crawling around in that cover crop?
Yeah, with cover crops, you know, we could certainly see kind of a green bridge that occurs. And I think about vetch and cutworms or ryegrass and armyworms. But we've got a good portion of Indiana and parts of Illinois as it relates to my geography that are really taking on cover crops. And so we've dealt with more slugs. And, you know, we create that kind of dense mat of cover in a more moist environment where those slugs can really thrive. And that's more of a tougher pest to manage. It's actually a mollusk, you know, it's not an insect, so our insecticides don't do anything on it. But a lot of times we'll recommend coming in with some nitrogen to try to dry those slugs out. And in terms of your cutworms, wireworms, things like that. We've got a couple different products that fit well in that InfraRow application, like Capture LFR or Ethos XB. Of course, with Ethos XB, we're going to provide some additional protection on some of those soil-borne pathogens like Pythium, Rhizoctonia, Fusarium. And so there's ways to manage around it, but scouting is critical. And if we're thinking about making that application, we've got to determine what's out there in terms of pests and address them accordingly. It might be a foliar insecticide if you've got cutworms or armyworms.
Been talking with Nick Hustedy here with FMC. Nick, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Yep, enjoyed it. Take care.
We've got Brian on with us right now. He farms in Indiana. And I know, Brian, you've got plenty of experience with cover crops. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, so Nick was just talking about some of the challenges. Obviously, you started off by saying, man, there's a lot of positives out here. Why do you choose to do cover crops, and what are some of the things that you're managing through?
We started back in the fall of 2012, so we've been doing it several seasons now. We got about a quarter of the farm in cover crops, and we've been seeing some pretty good stuff. Soil structure is really nice. We've actually gone back and tiled a couple fields after we cover cropped them for a while, and the way that soil comes up, it's mellow, pretty deep, but caught you at the end there. Nick was talking about the slugs. We fought that in one field 1 year. We haven't had a lot of insect issues with our covers, but it's one of those things I'm kind of waiting. Like, I know it's going to happen.
Yes.
Ready to deal with it when we get it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's some things that you just know, okay, the odds are pretty good that I'm going to have an issue. How about on a weed control standpoint? This has probably been one of the things that I get the most comments on from farmers. Man, this has really helped me hold down mare's tail in some of these tough weeds.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of that. We have found in our soybeans, if we let the rye get big enough, probably about knee high or so, we've let a couple fields go quite a bit bigger than that. But if that cover gets 15, 18 inches high, we've found those bean fields need one post herbicide spray, and they are getting it about the same time all the other fields are getting their second trip, and that's all they need.
Yeah, that's a big savings. There's no question. Tell me about
that. Pretty much pays for the rye.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I guess that's one way to look at that. That covered your cost of whatever you had for seed. Do you leave it green when you're planting, or have you got it burned down ahead of time?
We've gone to planting green for the most part. And what we've learned is you either want to plant green or you want to be crispy dead. You don't want to be in between. It's kind of like planting through a bunch of ropes if you let it get kind of half yellow and rubbery.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, okay. I hear a lot of guys talking about planting green anymore. And Nick was talking about that, depending on what you've got for a rotation, that you may have some diseases or something. Like, say you had the rye and you're going to come back in with corn, that you may be more concerned about disease than you would if you're coming in with soybeans. How about with your herbicide program? Has it changed things then? And you said you got about a fourth of the crop in covers. Has it changed what you're using on the rest of the farm?
It hadn't changed the pre-emerge a whole lot, because we've switched to pretty much no-till on every acre, except where we need to do like maybe some corrective stuff for ruts or address some compaction that's not going away in high traffic areas. Our pre-plant or pre-emerge is pretty much the same. We've been running like a Zidua or Zidua Pro in the burn down on the cereal rye ahead of the beans. And that works pretty well. Or if we're doing just glyphosate, we tossed in a few ounces of metribuzin if we see a few mare's tail coming, something like that.
Sure. Yeah, the metribuzin is getting a lot more popular. It's just such a broad spectrum of control, and the rotation restrictions are pretty friendly too. I've been talking with Brian out in Indiana about cover crops a little bit. Brian, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Good luck this spring.
Thank you.
We'll be right back after this. Stay tuned.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
With the success of the Case IH Steiger Quad Track and Magnum Road Track tractors, it's no secret why Case IH is the leader of the track. So it wasn't surprising when the competition started imitating us, because Case IH offered the first five-axle design to give you more power to the ground with less burming and compaction, all to help you be more productive. Still, we're flattered. In fact, if we weren't already red, we'd be blushing. To learn more, visit caseih.com/tracks.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're talking about cover crops, and this is something Brandon and I have done a little bit on our farm, mainly after our wheat rotation. We've struggled with a really short growing season like we had last year. When we get done with harvest and everything's frozen up and it's already starting to snow, that kind of limits things. But I know in different areas of the country, guys have been trying seeding in crop and other methods. And so thought it'd be fun to talk to some farmers that are working on a variety of things here with cover crops, just to get some other insights. Got Mike on with us right now out in Indiana. And Mike, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, good to be here, Darren.
I'm pretty sure I've talked to you about the seeding cover crops in the crop. Is this something that you guys are doing? And if so, what experience have you had?
We fly on our cereal rye and whatever we're putting on with it by Labor Day. You got to have a good pilot on standing corn. And then after soybean harvest, we have anywhere from three-way to a seven-way mix that we have an air seeder that we air seed it on as soon as possible. It just depends on how late it is and so on and so forth on the mix.
What do you expect to get for growth then with the cereal rye that you're putting into standing corn? You got big tall corn. Are you expecting it to germinate right away at that time, or what do you see with the early growth?
It depends on a rain event, you know, if we're going to have, you know, it doesn't take much to get it going, even along with annual rye, which is my cover crop of choice. But, you know, during harvest for corn, it is there's green grass growing. Now, this winter that we had, like right now, it's a whopping 7 degrees here in Indiana. I like the growth there a lot better in the spring than I do in the fall. So the last two falls, we have not had much growth at all. So therefore, you know, we let it come back as, and be patient as possible. And we plant into our cover crop and to green cover because we want as much growth as we can and get the activity of it in the spring. Now, in your situation, Darren, there's people that frost seed cereal rye or even annual rye, and as a matter of fact, I have a neighbor that's going to do that this week. So there's opportunities to do that.
Interesting.
Just by frost seeding. You can broadcast that with your potassium if you want to save a trip across the field. But frost seeding is a great way to get a cover crop out there on the grass side of things. But I would highly recommend that in your area.
Well, our problem, Mike, is we don't have a lot of moisture here, and we get worried about anything growing
in
the spring.
We do this year now. This year we got some moisture.
Yeah, it's a really unusual year.
Oh, we've got snow, Mike. We've got feet of snow.
See, here's the other problem, Mike. We like to plant into frost in the spring, and a lot of people
by
are
we,
like,
by we, Mike, me, Mike Brian means him.
But, I mean, we literally will plant corn sometimes when there is still frost in the ground. So there's just no time when our ground is frost-free, and that gets to be the concern. So in our region, we could get something going, but by the time it would get going, I got to have my corn there.
Okay, this is what I love about this debate. All right, Mike, so I'm sure on your farm operation, you probably had the voices of the naysayers saying, oh, I don't know if this is going to work. How did you get started?
You know, I just started with 20 acres of annual ryegrass 15 years ago. And then from there, I just added to it, and now I'm 100% cover crop because I just see such a huge benefit from it. Now, it helps having a peer group of farmers that are actually doing to share that information with.
Absolutely.
You know, what works best, what doesn't work best. So that's huge on our part, you know, to get that peer group support and knowledge from them, you know. And you got to have the mindset you're going to make it work.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't think you're going to have the mindset to make it work, you're not going to make it work.
No, and, I agree. That's true with anything, not just cover crops.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm always open for change and trying new things. We had a peer group just a couple of weeks ago at my farm. 19 advanced farmers throughout the state of Indiana shared information, and we're finding out things that the other farmers have not done in the past, and it's innovative. So it makes farming fun.
No, I agree. I like trying to get better. I like learning from others, and I think you're right on the money too here, Mike. That for anybody listening to it says, man, I'm interested in this, but I haven't tried it, or I don't think it's going to work in my area because we're way different than everybody else. Try it on a small scale and see what happens. Go through a few years and evaluate and just see. I loved one of the first comments that we had today from Brian out in Indiana. He said, man, my soil structure was noticeably different. And when you see that, that doesn't necessarily mean, oh, I'm going to instantly have a ton more dollars. But that tells me that long term, this looks pretty darn interesting. Hey, Mike, thank you for joining. I really appreciate you sharing a little bit and getting a good debate rolling here. That's awesome. Hey, thanks a lot. Good luck going into the spring.
Okay. Hey, have a great one.
You bet. You too. Got Brian out with us right now up in Minnesota. Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Pretty good. Okay. Let's talk about cover crops in your area. Talk about, maybe strip till or what types of practices you got going with it and what you're seeing.
Sure. So we transitioned our farm about 5 years ago to strip till. About that same time, maybe a year earlier, we had started to use some cereal rye after our sugar beet harvest. There's just no residue left after a harvest, and we get these open winters, and
That
dirt continues to blow, and we're the black eye of the neighborhood because we got ditches full of black dirt. So
yep.
We were tired of that and wanted to find a way to fix that. So we had really good luck the first few years. We had some nice warm falls. We were able to get that established right after harvest and get it up a couple inches tall, so at least would hold that soil through the winter. And then, of course, spring comes, and that stuff grows 6 inches a week. And so that part works really well. So as we got into strip till, then the next kind of natural progression or thought was to get into cover crops. And so we started to interseed in our corn as we're side dressing nitrogen. So we do that in one pass, and that's worked out really well. We've had some mixed results with the mixes or the different types of seed we're trying to use. So we're still trying to play with that recipe a little bit to get that dialed in. But all in all, I've seen good things from that. Soil structure, water infiltration really came a lot faster than we first thought.
Yeah, the water infiltration, I'm glad you brought that up, because where you're at, there's some pretty tough, tight soils in your part of central Minnesota. And I just think that water infiltration has got to be big, especially when you see so many guys doing conventional till and, like you said, with the sugar beet rotation too.
Right. Yep. No, it was, so we started in 14, just playing at the strip till and jumped in 100% 15. And by fall of 16, we had a really wet fall. And you know, everybody had told us about this soil structure thing, and that really wasn't our intent when we went to strip till. Our intent was more of the cost savings and that type thing, as we were coming off of $7 corn, knowing we had to lower our costs. But this the soil structure thing really opened our eyes, because at fall of 16, I had buddies of mine sending me pictures of grain carts and combines stuck and tracks and water in the tracks and this type of thing. And we harvested all our pattern tiled land first, which is about a third of what we farm, and then stood in the shop one morning scratching our head trying to decide what was the lesser of evils to go on and continue harvest. And as we went, we were just surprised ourselves, because we never left a track. We just drove. And so that was really surprising to us, to see it change that fast.
Yeah, that is awesome, because there are some huge ruts through most of Minnesota from guys struggling to get the crop out where that structure wasn't so good. Been talking with Brian over in Minnesota. Brian, thank you so much. Really appreciate you sharing today.
Sure. Appreciate it.
It's really interesting, because where Brian farms too, there isn't a lot of strip tillage done, and I'm sure he got those comments too, in addition to, well, that's not going to work. And for a lot of guys, it just fuels the fire even more to get rolling. Talking about cover crops on today's show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Indoprime SC. MycoApply Indoprime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Indoprime SC at IndoprimeCorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro Liquid Fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro Liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
the Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Build with the best. When you choose Morton Buildings for your next farm storage building, you'll experience the Morton advantage at every step, starting before the walls even go up. Since the value of our buildings is in its ability to protect what you have stored inside, we ensure that every component is researched and tested to withstand the elements in all weather conditions. And we back it up with the strongest warranty in the business. Looks better, built stronger, lasts longer. Learn more at MortonBuildings.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
We started utilizing the Dewar React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips. So you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We've been talking about cover crops, and I really liked a few of the points that have been made. Mike out in Indiana talked about just starting with a small amount of acres. I know, gosh, back 15 years ago, Brian, I was out on some farms in our state, and growers had put strips out through fields just to see, all right, let's just put a strip in several different fields and just see what that looks like. And see if they notice anything, and that way they could try it out on different soil types and in different rotations and so forth before they got bigger acres. And the guys that have done that have generally planted more, but there's certainly guys that have done it and then turned away from it too, with, you know, various issues that can come about. The idea of seeding into a standing crop, though, is something that almost certainly has to happen if we're going to make it work here, if we want growth in the fall.
You can't seed into a standing crop and expect you're going to have any crop, Darren, in this country. We're too dry. You can't lose that moisture. So here's where we start talking about the big differences. So Mike, that was in Indiana, well, when they've got probably double the moisture we do normally.
Very possibly.
That's just a lot different situation than what we're dealing with. And, you know, sometimes we'll get 1/4 their amount of rainfall. I mean, you're absolutely going to kill your, well, I shouldn't say kill. You're going to dramatically reduce your yield this year if you do something like that. So we can't take that risk. There's no possible chance I'm going to plant into a growing green crop in the spring in our geography. Now, in other geographies, probably works fantastically well, but we're just too dry to do that and even think about that. Plus, let's not forget, what's the root cause of this cover crop problem we've got out here in the first place? We harvest a lot of times and the ground's already froze. So if we're going to throw seed out there at that point, it's not going to grow anyway till our crop is already up. So that's not a cover crop. That's a next year's crop. So I'm just trying to say, you're not going to get any cover out of doing it in our situation behind corn or beans in a normal year. Behind wheat in our geography, fantastic. And we love cover crops.
And silage. That's just been a great rotation following silage as well when that gets chopped.
It can be, yes. Yep, it can be. It makes a lot of sense. Behind wheat, it makes some sense behind silage most years, but again, just depends on where you're at and how cold you are. We really like to see 60 days of growth. If you can't get 60 days of growth, it may not be worth it because you've got to go out and seed it. You're going to spend probably $15-$20. So you've got something in, you've got some investment.
It just depends on where you're at, because in a lot of areas there are programs to help growers with the cost of that, and there's even financial incentives in certain areas. You got to check those kinds of things out to see, hey, maybe in your area, if the seed really costs you nothing, you really aren't out much to take a risk at it. And then we hear from growers all the time that talk about, well, hey, I've got lots of spring before I plant. Where you're at, I hear you saying there's no spring before you plant.
Exactly.
The first day of spring, you're throwing stuff in the ground. So there are some differences there. If you've got a lot of spring before you plant, well, number one, you may consider planting a little earlier. But number two, maybe you do want a cover crop out there to keep the weed keep the weeds down so you don't have any issue that way. And also to give something growing out there for all the beneficial soil microbes that need a living host in the field. The more time you can keep something growing in that field, the better.
I liked your first point, especially why are we not planting earlier? And maybe people have, and it just hasn't worked out very well. But, you know, I think about us when we're planting when the thaw occurs, basically, why are other people not trying to plant?
I know there's guys down in Texas that have crop up that took on a little bit of frost this week. And, you know, there are certainly guys just anxious to see, well, how is that going to turn out? And our experience is it's turned out pretty well, actually. If we've had a little bit of frost on stuff, it's only got a leaf or two out of the ground. No big deal.
No. Yeah, you're not killing the growing point. Okay, here's another thing. We get a lot of questions about residual herbicides and then planting a cover crop. Let me remind you, this is a cover crop. It is not your cash crop. So if we ding up the cover crop a little bit, is it the end of the world? No, it's no big deal. So the first concern we have is doing the very best possible job with our cash crop. So if I have to take a step backward on my herbicide and get less weed control just so I don't have residual that hurts my cover crop, there's not a chance in the world I'm doing that. Use the very best herbicides for your actual cash crop so you can make the most money possible. And yeah, if you ding up your cover crop a little bit, or if you have to switch what cover crops, what type of cover crop you're raising, do that instead, because that isn't making money. The cash crop is making money. So don't forget about that. So yeah, if I've got two equal herbicides, one would hurt the cover crop, the other wouldn't, well, of course, then use the one that isn't going to hurt the cover crop. But I'm just trying to say we've had people sacrificing good herbicides. I mean, good herbicides.
Weed control that may hurt your crop.
Oh, it's going to hurt my cover crop. Who cares?
Yeah, you got to find the best of both worlds, and you have to pay the bills, so don't ever lose sight of that. We've got to make sure
Stop. You said you have to find the best of both worlds. I disagree 100%, and that's my very point. You have to find the very best thing for your cash crop, and then let's take a look at the cover crop.
Brent,
you plan in the winter, then you can figure that out.
So often there are two or three really good choices for the cash crop, so just find the best one. That also plays in your other thing, but you don't want to give up weed control, and you don't want to give up yield.
Nope, I agree with you.
All right, let's jump back into the mailbag here. We got a question, and this one comes from Jim in South Dakota. He said, I ran some soil tests through Neil Kinsey's lab and got recommendations. I put on some lime trying to raise calcium levels, but my corn yields in the first year dropped off a little bit. Can you take a look at my samples and see what you think?
Okay, so this is the exact scenario we had on our farm. We had soil pH that was perfect, and we had calcium levels that were low. If you have this, put on gypsum, okay? Put on gypsum rather than lime. On some of our stuff, we put on lime. On some of the stuff, we just flat out over-applied lime because we thought it wasn't fully, or we thought it was already fully broken down, yet we kind of weren't thinking that, hey, we're in a cold, dry area. Anyway, what I'm seeing on his test is now we've got some stuff that was probably in the mid-sixes, now it's in the mid-sevens. Same thing happened on our farm, cost us 30 to 50 bushels on yield. So now we're working on elemental sulfur to drive that pH back down. What he had said, what Jim had told us, is that Neil said, use gypsum, but if you can't find gypsum, you could use some calcium carbonate. Well, the problem with the calcium carbonate is it's going to raise the pH, and we don't want that pH in the sevens for corn. That is not good for corn. We want it in the sixes. Anyway, if you're going to use the calcium carbonate, then you should also use elemental sulfur, provided there's good drainage. But just moving forward, Jim, what I would say is for any of your ground that's in the sixes, you don't want to raise that anymore. So don't put on any lime in that case. Just use gypsum. And I kind of wish Neil wouldn't have said even thrown out the option for you of using lime. I get why he's doing it, because we're looking more at the long term than we are the short term. Okay, in the short term, yep, probably wasn't the best, but in the long term, this is going to be a good thing because your magnesium levels are just so high. And if we can get those magnesium levels down by, in effect, raising the calcium levels, long term, that's going to be a good thing for your soil, which is going to end up being a good thing for your yield. But what I see now is you've got a few spots that are over 7 pH. Again, if you have your drainage fixed, if you have good drainage, then I would encourage you to try to drive that down. Now, the other thing that I noticed on here is high levels of sodium, at least in some spots. So if you've got sodium that is high, then I'd really encourage you take a hard look at how am I going to get that fixed. I'm looking at one here, Darren, that is 9.5% sodium. So what happened out in your fields and your yield reduction this year might have had nothing to do with what we're talking about at all on this lime. It might have everything to do with the sodium deal, okay? So I'm just trying to say, if it's me, I'm looking at that sodium, that's the first thing that I go, whoa, I got to get that taken care of. Honestly, if you get that taken care of, drop that sodium down, your pH might just follow all by itself. Most likely, you've got a drainage issue. You got to get that drainage fixed. Get some tile in the ground. Once you do that, then you should be in pretty good shape to reduce that sodium even further with some sulfur.
Be right back with more of your questions after this. Stay tuned.
Think about a quarter inch of rain. That's all it takes to activate Armazon Pro herbicide in your corn and protect against weeds. Now think about a full inch of rain, the amount most other herbicides require for activation. How long will you have to wait to get that? The weeds hope you choose another herbicide. Your corn hopes you choose Armazon Pro herbicide. Pick a winner. Talk to your BASF rep about Armazon Pro herbicide today. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Using N-Serve nitrogen stabilizer with fall fertilizer applications keeps nitrogen available into the spring for maximum crop growth. Field trials in Iowa show N-Serve delivered an average revenue increase of $22.96 per acre, and N-Serve is the only recognized nitrogen stabilizer product in the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy because it reduces nitrate leaching. That's max profit in an environmentally sustainable way. Calculate your field's profit potential at nitrogenmaximizers.com.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time. I got a question here from Wes and he's in Illinois. Wes said, I got a few weed issues, water hemp and mare's tail, plus if we don't get a good canopy, we have some fall panicum. Also, recently, Morning Glory is making a comeback. Cocklebur had a big showing in 2018. Wow, sounds like you had some challenges out there, Wes. He said, I'm wondering what your observations are regarding the efficacy of Zidua Pro in your three pre-emerge herbicide technique for soybeans.
Don't like it at all. Here's why. Nothing against BSF. They have fantastic products, and many of them fit in a lot of situations. But here's what Zidua Pro's got in it. It's got Sharpen. I don't like that in soybeans. The reason why is I can't use a high enough rate to get me long residual on weeds like he's talking about, like water hemp there, for example. So what I'd rather use instead of the Sharpen is Valor or Authority. Okay, you can't use Sharpen plus Valor or Authority during the year or right around planting time because you will end up hurting your beans. So cut the Sharpen, insert Valor or Authority instead. The next component, Pursuit. Your water hemp is ALS resistant, I'm almost positive. Your mare's tail is ALS resistant, I'm almost positive. You can have some activity on Morning Glory and Cocklebur, very little on Fall Panicum. So why are you throwing the Pursuit in there and spending all that money when it's not getting your target weeds? I'd pull the Pursuit out. Instead, I would insert Metribuzin. That will be way cheaper and much more effective in the weeds you're after. Now, the third component of Zidua Pro is Zidua. I have no issue with Zidua. I love Zidua. It's a group 15 herbicide, similar to like a Warrant, a Dual, Outlook. It's great. And especially for out in Illinois, it sticks around a long time, even if you have a lot of rain. So that's amazing. I just prefer Zidua be used early post. So the Anthem products, for example, will have Zidua. There are other ways to get Zidua, I'm just trying to say. But I like that early post, and it extends my residual. Instead of using Zidua Pre, I would pull that out and I would insert like Trifluralin or Prowl. So yeah, I don't like Zidua Pro for our 3 Pre program. Instead, I'm going to use Valor Authority plus Metribuzin plus one of the yellows, either Trifluralin or Prowl.
All right. Oh, one other comment that he had. He said the Prowl cost just as much as the Zidua Pro, and so it's like, wow, I could get 3 modes of action for the same price as one.
Yeah, but you're not getting 3 effective modes of action. You have the Sharpen's not going to give you any residual month down the road. The Pursuit isn't going to kill the weeds, and you've got the Zidua, but the Zidua is going to be harder on the crop pre-emerge than what the Prowl is. So, yep, I get it, but look, of the 3 pre's, Authority or Valor is first. That's the PPO. That always has to be in there, in my opinion, okay? The next most important one is the Metribuzin. The yellow is 3, okay? So if you say, man, I can't spend the money, banker won't let me spend the money, whatever it is, then the yellow is the one I'm going to cut. Now, you're not going to be happy if you cut the yellow, but that's the one I'm going to cut. To really cheapen that up, you only need to spend $4, go Trifluralin, and incorporate it. So there's your choice.
All right. Thanks for the questions. Really appreciate that. Got one here. This one is from Pat in Nebraska. And Pat said, got some lighter soils. I'm in northeast Nebraska. It's kind of some sandier ground. And I pulled soil samples in the fall of 2016 on some ground that I have leased, and the lease comes up this year. So I'm working on data that's a couple years old. I can show you, here's my program that I've used for 2 years. What I'm wondering, with the soil pH around the upper 5s across this field, what would you think about using Pell Lime at 20 to 50 pounds to try to reduce the acidity, yep, around that band? Mm-hmm. I would put it in a band maybe 8 inches deep. Yeah, it was my game plan while I'm strip tilling in some other products like P and K.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad idea. Now, here's the thing. If you've never done this before, I'm not doing it on a ton of acres. I'm going to do it on a few acres, and I might do some half fields or some strips to find out, does this pay or does this not? It sounds good in theory, but let me also say, for the long term, and this is something I'd go to the landlord with, and I'd say, look, Here are all the soil tests. You can see this is in the upper fives. We don't have a very healthy soil out here with pH in the upper fives. We want to get it into at least the low sixes. We don't need a lot of lime, but we need to broadcast some lime out here to make it better for the soil microbes, to make it better for the crops, just to make your soil overall healthier. The problem is if I do that, it's going to last for, let's call it 5 years. Okay, so if I'm going to have 5 years and I only have 1 year that I get to use it, then I don't want to have to pay the bill for the next 4 years in effect. So can I get some kind of reduction on this? Would you be willing to pay the bill and I'll pay you for 1/5 of it each year over the next 5 years? Or I'll pay the whole bill, but can I get some money back if you rent it to somebody else along the way? So that's my first option. This other thing is my second option. And what he suggested is my second option.
All right. Thanks for the questions. We really appreciate that. Got one. I think this is from Nigeria, Brian, from Oganiru. He said, I first learned of the importance of micronutrients on corn by looking at your content online. But I found out that micronutrients are literally unavailable in my country. I can get some zinc and some manganese sulfates, etc., from chemical dealers. Would that be similar product or what should I be looking for?
Yeah, that'd be similar product. But let me just say this. If you're listening today and you're in the United States or Canada and you hear about somebody in Africa and that fertilizer isn't even available, does it, I hope, make you appreciate where you get to live and work and farm a little bit more? We so often take for granted here in North America all the advantages we have. We're busy complaining about, you know, some of the little things, or, you know, we are trying to figure out the profitability side, which is great. That's all well and good. But just think about there. They don't even have the options in a lot of cases. So things, I know things might be tough on your farm today, but I just look at it as things could be even worse if we're in that kind of situation. But, you know, specifically to his question, the chemical retailers should have something available for you. And there are a lot of chemical retailers, even in the United States and Canada, that have those fertilizer products available on the micronutrient level.
Thanks for the question, and thanks for checking out our content. We really appreciate that. Get a soil sample here. This is from Zach in Northern Colorado. He said, I'm an agronomist. I've got a client's field that really needs some help. First and foremost, I know I need to grid sample, so I have more samples for you to look at here. We've got center pivot irrigation, and we're going to be testing the water this spring as soon as we can because I do believe the water may be part of the issue or adding to it. Yep. The other management practice I hear over and over on your show is tiling. Does this look like a field based on the soil sample that would suggest that tiling could help with this high pH of, was it 8.6, Brent?
8.6.
He said the farmer strip-tills this. They plan to plant soybeans there this spring. Wondering what you think about that, and also what would you think about putting on gypsum and then next fall add elemental sulfur?
Okay, so first of all, the cation exchange capacity is only 12. And let me just give you a couple of key numbers here. His base saturation potassium is 13.3%. So my guess is this is ground that has had a lot of manure on it over the years, and that needs to stop right now. That level is way too high. Here's the biggest problem. The sodium level is at 18%. The sodium level is 18%. I mean, that's almost dead soil.
Okay, so here's one of the things, Zach. When you're recommending a soybean variety for that farmer, find one that has the excluder trait, if you've got or excluder characteristic. It actually helps that soybean plant hold salt out. And for anybody who has pivots, especially pivots where sodium can be an issue, this isn't a fix, but at least it's going to help this crop have a better chance of surviving. Also, look for products like there's a biological called Heat Shield that also has protection from salt. So it's not, again, not a complete silver bullet or anything like that, but it's another tool that will help. Then we've got to start working on some of these issues. Now, yes, tiling will definitely help you move some of those things out of the soil. With elemental sulfur, if you don't have good drainage under it, it's hard for that to get to work. So you can see those salts go down and they can pop back up. Having the tile out there will allow you to flush them out.
Yeah, so I'm going to guess, yes, tile may help. But it looks to me like we got a water issue. That's my assumption, a water and an over-application of manure. So if we cut the manure, if we maybe were to add some drainage, at least in spots, and hopefully fix our water, over time, things will definitely get better.
Thanks a lot, Zach. Really appreciate the question. Yeah, if you get a water sample and would like us to look at that or get some grid samples pulled this spring, feel free to send those as well. Thanks, everybody, for listening today. Be sure to join us each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.